Stage to Stage, the theatrical works of Robert Cohen, sponsored by the partners of the UCI Libraries. I'm Jerry Munoff, the University Librarian. I'm pleased to have you all here with us tonight. Before I introduce our speakers, I'd like to tell you about a few news items from the libraries, keep you up to date. It's certainly been an exciting and successful year for the libraries. Our staff have been very busy dealing with record numbers of students and faculty on campus. The campus enrollments keep growing, as you know, and the use of the libraries continues to grow. It's an interesting observation that at a time when there's increased use of online access to our collections and services and resources, the visits to our facilities continues to grow also. So we're projecting for this year that we're going to have about 2.2 million visits to the library buildings on campus. And we'll also have about 2.2 million online searches that come out of approximately 30 million hits to our web pages. The library's web page is one of the most actively used on campus. So we're juggling services and improvements in both those areas. To help us manage our growth, the Jack Langston Library Fund helped support significant renovations on the third and fourth floors of this building. We upgraded the quality of the space. We put in new carpets, painted the walls, put in new lightings, new ceilings, new furniture. We expanded access to computers, increased the number of seats, and expanded shelving for library collections. The students say that they love the space. We've gotten a lot of rave comments from them. And so the next phase of our renovations will be to do similar treatments to the main entry floor at this level and the first floor. So that'll be happening in the next year or so. I think I've seen a few of you here who were at an event. We co-sponsored in early April, Literary Orange. It's a community event celebrating authors, readers, and libraries. It was a great success. The all-day conference featured more than 30 authors in all genres, including acclaimed authors such as Janet Fitch, UCI's Ron Carlson, and mystery writer Elizabeth George. Literary Orange will be held in April of 2009, next year, and it will be held on campus and in partnership again with the Orange County Public Library. So you can check our website for more information about that. Tonight we open our new exhibit on the stage productions of one of UCI's most renowned directors and distinguished professors of acting, Robert Cohen. Robert was the founding chair of the UCI Drama Department from the campus's opening in 1965 up until 1990. He's now the Claire Trevor Professor of Drama. He's a prolific director for the stage and a renowned teacher of acting. He's the author of 12 books on acting and theater, several original plays, translations of classics, scholarly articles, and dramatic reviews, and he has conducted advanced teaching residencies throughout the U.S. and the world. Robert has directed more than 70 productions on campus and 30 on the professional stage. His most recent production at UCI was Rabbit Hole, and he will direct The School for Wives at the Utah Shakespearean Festival this summer. In recognition of his exemplary career, in 1993, Robert was awarded the UCI Medal, the campus's highest honor. And in 1999, he received the Career Achievement Award from the Association for Theater and Higher Education. In 2005, Robert stepped back into the role of chair of the drama department for a few years while a search was conducted for a new chair. Our exhibit focuses on Robert's productions at UCI and was inspired by his generous donation to the libraries in 2006 of his collection of production books, in which he meticulously documented the stage productions he's directed since 1966. The exhibit was curated by Jackie Dooley, who's head of special collections and our exhibits program, and she worked closely with Robert on the exhibit. If you didn't see it on the way in, I hope you will take time during the reception or afterwards to take a good look at it. Julia Cassara and Sage Kim from the Library Design Services prepared and installed the exhibit and designed the publication with the help of Sylvia Irving. Most of the materials on exhibit are from the production books. Some of the photographs were loaned by Robert, and selected photographs and posters were made available to us from the publicity archives of the Claire Trevors School of the Arts with the assistance of Dean Noema Fernandez, and we appreciate that. I'm also very pleased to share with you, prior to any announcement, that Robert has also agreed to donate his faculty papers to the library in the future. This is a valuable addition to the significant faculty papers we hold, which are critical for students' learning and scholars' research. So thank you, Robert, for this wonderful gift. We really appreciate it. You join other distinguished members of the faculty who have donated their papers, including two who are with us here tonight, who I've seen, Spence Olin and Seymour Metton, and we're glad to have you with us this evening. Tonight, joining Robert in conversation is Professor Eli Simon, Chair of the Drama Department. Dr. Simon is also a highly accomplished director and professor of drama. He's directed over 80 theatrical productions at regional university and Shakespearean theaters across the country and overseas, specializing in the development of original commedias, clown shows, American classics, and musical. He is the author of Masking Unmasked, Four Basic Approaches to Acting, which articulates systems of mask acting that were developed and are being taught by Simon at UCI. He serves as the director both of Clownzilla, an original clown troupe that creates silent clown shows, and the California Commedia Troupe, which is dedicated to the creation and international touring of original commedias and mass performances. Dr. Simon has been quoted as saying, "Robert Cohen's continuing influence on UCI drama is such that faculty and students align themselves around him, taking solace every day in the knowledge that his unfettered brilliance as a director, writer, and teacher of acting positively affects everyone in our theatrical universe." We thought it was fitting that we have for each of them a director's chair, and I welcome Robert and Eli to them now.
You want to go to the left or the right?
You're the director.
Doesn't break. All right. No, it's just fine.
Break the chair. Trick chairs.
Spoke too soon.
We need a director to tell us how to sit in these chairs.
Okay.
All right. Well, it's a great honor to be here, and I'm the question asker, which is the fun part. And it really is an honor to just share the stage with Robert, and it's been an honor to work with him for 20 years now in the department. I always feel as though I came into the universe of the drama department that really was created by Robert Cohen. We all enjoy a national reputation in drama, but it was really Robert that laid the foundation for that. Created the department, made the hires in the department, and really brought the department to the stature that it enjoys now. So the first question I'd like to ask is that it's unusual for a director of plays to write books. So we'd like to know how you began writing and to what extent your books emerged from your years here at UC Irvine.
It's not that unusual because you do it too, so.
on a very small scale comparison.
It is relatively unusual, and I must say the fact that I write books nobody is more surprised that I have done this than I am myself. I was trained simply as a director. I took a position at Irvine simply to be a director and a teacher of directing. And of dramatic literature. While I had a doctoral degree from the Yale Drama School, it was a drama school. It was not a school of English department, or it was not part of the graduate school at Yale. And I had not a single course that required any paper or any scholarly work other than one semester course in theater history, which is something I've never written about since. I'm a very, very lucky person, and one of the most lucky things in my life, and it cannot be replicated here at UCI, is that when I came here, all of the faculty were housed in two buildings, the Biological Sciences Office Building and what is now Murray Krieger Hall. At that point was the office building for the arts, for the humanities, for political science, a lot of the social science. Even my next door neighbor was Frank Cannonito in the math department. Mm-hmm. We were all together, and I must say, in that first faculty, there were only 100 of us, and we all knew each other. And that was so seminal to me, and I just want to name a few people. I created the course in Drama 40 together with Professor Ed Schell, who I see is here today, who created the course in Comparative Literature 40. And these courses were cross-listed, and we both taught different sections of them in those early years. And Ed proposed to me in the mid-80s that we do a series of medieval plays, which we did for 5 years, 3 years on stage, and a fifth year after a year off in a video. And we did something like 18 medieval plays that received international attention, and out of that I published a book, an anthology of plays that included my own adaptation of the first year of our cycle plays. Steve Shapiro also, he was in the English department. Steve Shapiro in the English department was a very good friend of mine, a very radical guy that anybody who was around UCI knew very well. And at the end of my first summer, as we were nearing the summer, this is in 66, he said, "What are you doing this summer?" I said, "I don't know. I mean, I was hoping to do some summer theater work, but there are no summer theaters here. In fact, there are no theaters here." There was no professional theater at all in Southern California at that time. The only professional theater in the entire state was in San Francisco. And I had a young child. I wasn't going to go off for that. He said, "Well, what was your dissertation on?" Because he knew I had a doctor. And I said, "It was on Jean Giraudoux." And he thought for 2 seconds. He said, "I think there could be another book out on Giraudoux." And I said, "Well, what are you talking about?" He said, "Well, why don't you write a book on Giraudoux?" I don't have anything better to do, so I'll do that. And after I finished it, I didn't know how to publish a book, so I went to the music department where my friend Colin Slim had written several books, and I said, "Do you know a good press that would publish this?" He said, "Why don't you try the University of Chicago Press?" And that became my very first publication. And my next publication was stimulated by Jan Plastino and Jim Penrod in the dance department. I was at a cocktail party that they hosted. And one of the persons at that party was a publisher, their publisher for a book that they had written. And they said, "Why don't you meet Dick and Judy Bear?" And Dick was the publisher, but Judy Bear was the woman behind the man there. And she said, what would a student in your department like to read?" And I said, "Well, they'd love to read a book on how to get a job as an actor." Who wouldn't? Everybody wanted to be an actor, but nobody knew how to do it. So she said, "That sounds very interesting. Why don't you write one for us?" Well, I said, "I'm not an actor. I'm a director." And we left it at that. But the next year, I was at another party that Jan and Jim hosted. And she was there again. She said, "Have you written the book for us?" And so I thought for a while. I said, "No, but I will." And 4 weeks later, believe it or not, I sent her a manuscript of the book, and that became my second book. By this time, I was getting known as a writer. I have always been very, very stimulated by my colleagues. Franco Tonelli in the French department, the late Franco Tonelli, a wonderful man, suggested we do a Molière festival 1 year. And I said, "Okay, let's do a Molière festival." We did Bourgeois Gentlemen, and I translated the play, and then I published the translation as a play. Ted Bruner and Lucy Berkowitz in the classics department, it was just Ted at the time, Lucy came on board. In my second year at Irvine, I said, "I'd love to do Oedipus Tyrannos, Oedipus Rex. Would you translate it for me?" I didn't even know him. He was the only person teaching classics. I knocked on his door, the only classics professor on campus. He said, "Come in." I said, "Would you like to do this?" He said, "Sure, I'll translate it for you." In fact, I have a friend, Lucy Berkowitz in Wisconsin. Can she do the choruses? And we said, "Sure, bring her along." We did it. And then after we did that production, and there's some pictures out there of that, they invited me to contribute a chapter to their Norton Critical Edition of that. So that became the next production. The most interesting aspect for me, and the luckiest interaction I had was with a man named Creel Frohman, who I doubt if he's here today. He was a professor of political science, which was my undergraduate major. And Creel, I said, what are you reading these days? Because we always talked about everything, we meaning all the faculty, and anybody here from those days, Seymour Menton is here, Stentolin is here, Dick Frank is here, I just see lots of people, Bob Pokenflick from those early days when we all knew each other, and these days are gone now, we're in different buildings on different sides of different streets. But Creel said, you got to read The Pragmatics of Human Communication by Paul Václavik. Now, it's possible that nobody in this room has heard of this book. I certainly never heard of that book. But this became the most influential book I have ever read in my life. It brought to me my attention the works of Gregory Bateson and Jeffrey Byrne and Irving Goffman and R.D. Lang and all of the current pop psychologists or people who are writing about interaction, social interaction, conversation analysis, cybernetic thinking, and it revolutionized my thinking about acting. And it was at that point I started to write about the art of acting. And after I began writing about it, I began teaching it. And that has been intellectually probably the strongest contribution I think I have made to my field was to create a really new system. I would like to think in some ways a revolutionary system of acting that follows a cybernetic or future-oriented model rather than a past-oriented or deterministic model. I won't go into any details beyond that, but this, I've written 5 books on acting and they're all based on, I don't know where any of them would have been if Creel Frohman had not said, why don't you read this book, I'd never heard of it. So it's one of the great lucky things in my life to have been arrive at a campus with a small enough faculty all to be housed in 2 buildings. We were all members of the Academic Senate. We all went to every meeting of the Academic Senate. We made such decisions as, shall we have football at UCI? Shall we call these schools or colleges?
Well, what happened to our football team?
We voted no. Dan Aldrich voted yes, but he was the only one. Shall we have fraternities at UCI? We voted no, he voted yes, and we do have fraternities. What shall be the mascot of UCI? You all must know that story.
Okay, well, we want to shift a little bit to your book on theater. It's an introductory text with a full chapter on Asian theater.
Yes, it is.
And we know as well that you've been invited to teach in over a dozen countries on all inhabited continents, and your books are published in 6 foreign languages. So the question is, how and why have you developed such a global perspective of theater?
Oh, great. I come from Washington, D.C., which is an international city, and I live next door to people who were ambassadors or worked in consulates anyway. A Romanian was next door, and we had a number of foreign people in our little town of Chevy Chase, Maryland, right outside the city limits. When I was in graduate school at Yale, I decided I wanted very much to see theater in Europe. And I left on the day that classes ended in the end of my second year and returned on the day that they began in the fall quarter. I had 4 solid months. I saw every great theater in Europe. I went to theaters of London, the Old Vic, the Royal Shakespeare Company. The Old Vic was the predecessor of the National Theater. In Paris, we went to the Comédie Française and the Odéon. We went down to the Avignon Theater Festival, where I saw productions from all over the world. We went to the Sarah Bernhardt Theater, the Théâtre de Ville in Paris, where we saw productions from Moscow, the Moscow Theater of Satire. I went to Berlin and saw the Berliner Ensemble and the Schiller Theater and many, many theaters in both East and West Berlin. We saw La Scala in Rome, just in Milan, but they were performing actually in Verona. They were performing in the Opera Caracalla in Rome. We saw theaters in the Royal National Theaters of Holland and Sweden and in Switzerland, everywhere. And this was my education. I think I learned more that 4 months than I did 3 years studying at Yale. I certainly learned more about theater. It was so stimulating. I saw a director, one director I saw is Matthias Langhoff, whose name I did not know at that time in Berlin. And only a few years ago did I realize that the production I had seen in 1964, I guess, three in Berlin, was directed by the same Matthias Langhoff who had become my idol by mm-hmm. the year 2005, and he will be here on this campus next year. This is in conjunction with the trip he's making to San Diego. So I got very, very fascinated with European theater, and from that point on, the very first course I taught at Irvine was a course in European modern drama in fall of 1965. And one of my first students in that very class with seven people was my wife, Lorna Cohen. And she was tremendous and wrote a terrific essay. We didn't meet until 5 years later, but she was one of the great students in that class, which specialized in French drama and German drama and pretty much everything in between. But when my first book that was published was Acting Power, and that was in the early 60s, and it was published in Finnish, of all languages, because it was by coincidence, again, a very lucky happenstance. An American theater professor had gone to Finland to spend a year, and he brought it with him, and he gave it to a Finnish actress who fell in love with the book and wrote to me while I was directing a play in Colorado and said, I want to translate your book. I'm a retired actress. I thought she was probably 70 years old. Turned out she was 29 and gorgeous. She just meant she had stopped acting for a while and wanted to do a translation, and I went and visited her, and that led to many, many translations, but more than that, much teaching of acting in Europe. And when I teach in Europe, I teach in the language of the country. So I teach, of course, I speak in English and with the translator where necessary, but the students do their performances in the language of their country, sometimes from the literature of their country. So I've directed scenes in Estonian and Hungarian and Russian and Polish and Serbo-Croatian, and you name the language, and if it's in Eastern Europe, I've taught students doing scenes, all of which are from Shakespeare or Sam Shepard. Those are my models.
And explaining
Sam Shepard to the Chinese was quite a story. Then with my book on theater, which is an international book with international coverage, I decided I had to cover Asian drama as well because it's a book on theater in the world. And so 1 year, Lorna and I traveled to Japan. I decided I could not write about something I could not myself experience. Like so many theater professors here in this country, I've seen lots of Asian theater done in America, but it's never the same thing. Asian theater has to be done in an Asian theater with an Asian audience. You cannot understand kabuki until you understand the kakagoa, that the audience shouts back to the kabuki performer in the middle of performance. And they do a wonderful mai, which is a kind of a freeze in the Japanese theater, Japanese position. And five people up in the balcony go, Narita-ya! Without that, Narita-ya! Which means, I know you were born in a shop in Narita. Doesn't make any sense, does it? But without that, it's not kabuki. So you have this nice, polite audience in American theater watching kabuki, and then you have these screaming kabuki fans eating their sushi and watching the kabuki in the kabukiza in Tokyo, and you're really seeing the kabuki. So at that point, I added a Japanese theater chapter. Actually, I called it Asian theater, but I only talked about Japanese theater with a little paragraph on the others. For the next edition, I went to China and saw an amazing series of plays in Chinese opera in every form of, not every form, the 300 of them, but in the seven major forms of Chinese opera, shichu, that are performed today. And so I added that to the book. Since that time, I've been to Korea and added a large section on Korea, and I haven't yet been to India. That's the next trip, but mm-hmm. I've got quite a bit on India as well. So I've become now global to the extent I have. One of my plays was done in Africa, and I went to Africa to teach there and to work with the students there and to experience firsthand African theater. To me, this is the great movement of theater in my lifetime. Because when I grew up in theater, it was all American. It was all Tennessee Williams and Arthur Miller and some of the English people. that was mainly T.S. Eliot and Terence Rattigan at the time. There was no Tom Stoppard, although I met him the first year I was here at UCI with his first play, which I saw in Washington. And he was as young as, he was exactly the same. We were both 26 and met backstage at the National Theater in Washington. But that was it. It was English language theater and American theater, American drama, which is a great drama. No question about it. American drama is one of the fine dramas in the world and getting better every year. But our problems these days are global. Everybody knows that. Our problems are political problems, our environmental problems, our cultural problems, our religious problems. We have them. We all know we have them. They're all global. Theater is a mass entertainment format. Live theater is not mass entertainment, but it is spread out everywhere in the country because live theater can be done essentially for free. Not on Broadway, not even at UCI. Well, yes, at UCI. Half the productions we do in our drama department are free. There's no budget. They're free. Some of them are better than the stuff that we spend a lot of money on. Some of them are done by faculty, some are done by graduate students, some are done by undergraduates. And they're just terrific opportunities to spread information. So theater, live theater spreads around the world. Films and television and video and web communications go even further around the world. And as we face increasingly global problems, we face our problems globally, internationally, we have to transcend language barriers, cultural barriers, and geographical barriers. We do that with tourism, we do it with cuisine, and we do it with the entertainment arts and the performing arts, and not just in drama, of course, but in music and in dance, all the performance arts, and in art, painting, studio art, installation art. That's why the theater has to be approached in a global way. That's why I've always done it in a global way. That's where my future is aimed at a global way. In the last two or three years, Brian Reynolds is here, has written several plays, one of which Eli's directed, two of which I've directed, that have all been produced in five countries now in Eastern Europe, and moving soon, we hope, to Asia and Western Europe as well. And these are opportunities that are tremendously exciting and fulfilling for all of us. And when I say Brian and myself and Eli, we're also talking about almost every member of the drama faculty, scene designers, lighting designers, sound designers, dramaturgs, and other artists who and actors too, who participate in these international adventures. Eli has tremendous connections in Korea and has done several productions in Korea, in Italy, and in Spain. And so we in drama think we would like to think that we reach out globally in the kind of a profession and the kind of art that when I came into it was really done very close to home.
Mm. So what you get when you listen to Robert is you get a sense of what an inherently curious guy he is, you know, which is why I think that he's become such an expert on so many facets of theater. And it's true, if you have a question about how to interpret a Shakespearean line, or where did this Chinese opera come from, or anything about avant-garde theater, or Girodoux, or 100 other questions you might have that are theater related, you don't really have to go online and Google search it. You can just, where's Robert? He ought to know, and he usually
does. The one requirement to be a professor of anything is curiosity.
I remember Robert saying that to a group of students, and that had it seems like a very simple thought, really, but it's true.
It's everything. And if you lose your curiosity, you have to retire. If the work is too hard. If you're not curious, why do it? You can't do it. You have to, I don't know why. Why is that? Why did they do that? Hmm. Why did he do that? When was he born? Did he know him? Did he know her? If you don't have those kinds of questions every time you read something or see something, I don't know how you can stay in the profession of teaching, scholarship.
I think it's that kind of mind that could write an entire book about all different facets of theater and make each essay in there so readable. It's very readable. But let's shift directions a little bit, and let's talk about direction of plays. Robert has directed 70 productions. I actually sat and counted them, and so there were 70.
Oh, really?
Exactly 70 UC Irvine productions, or university productions and 30 professional productions. That's a staggering amount of shows to direct, given the amount of work that goes into them. But maybe you could talk a little bit about how the direction of these plays has shifted over the years from when you began directing plays, and in what ways this has informed your writing as you've rewritten your books, some of them 8 times.
It hasn't shifted all that much. I still find myself doing things that I did in graduate school. I'm doing a show this summer, School for Wives, that I did a scene from in graduate school 50 years ago. And was it 50 years ago? Or I'm closer to 45. And in that scene, the time I did it, we had a couple of French kids. We had a French librarian and a French student. And I said, I got an idea. Let's do the dialogue between Agnès and my Agnès from is here in the audience tonight. She's going to be in, we're going to rehearsal in Utah in about 4 days. My Agnès was the librarian, and Arnulf, and they had all their scenes together in French. But in this play, Arnulf, after they have scenes, he comes and talks to the audience. And I had those done in English so that the students at Yale, where I did the scene, could understand it. And as I was blocking the play in my mind the other night that I'm going to do this summer, I thought back to that very scene. And so in some ways, theater, we are in the theater. We are working with old material. We are working with a tradition, within a tradition. I like to think in theater it's always something old, something new, something borrowed, and something blue. And the old is the tradition, Shakespeare, Moliere. Even David Mamet is old because a year ago he wrote the play, and it's now 2008, and he wrote the play in 2007. So it's already a year. Nowadays is a long time ago. And something new always has to be in the theater. If it isn't new, nobody's going to want to watch it. No play is a museum piece. So when H.L. and I did these medieval plays that were written in the 1400s. And we adapted them in some ways just to make the language a little more accessible, but we kept almost all of the medieval expressions, sometimes pronounced them in such ways that they could be understood today. We were very, very new in the ideas that we brought to it and the kind of staging we brought to it because the audience is new. For instance, we couldn't in the medieval theater replicate a medieval audience. Medieval audience would come from 100 miles around to see a play in the springtime, Corpus Christi Day. They only had one chance a year to do it. Well, our people can go to a play any night of the week they want, at almost any time they want, and have a choice of any play they want. The people from Chester and New York didn't. We couldn't really recreate that experience, so we recreated it in the Claire Trevor Theater, then called the Village Theater, in our own way, so that was new. And so something borrowed is I borrow from my colleagues. And we say, I saw this once. I think this is a nice idea. And there's something blue, of course, you can use your own imagination. Something has to be a little bit off color, a little bit risque, a little bit chancy. And it really has to get us in a way that isn't offensive necessarily. And blue, I don't think, is an offensive word. But something that has to reach us viscerally, touch us emotionally, romantically, even sexually, in some way that just keeps it very, very much alive, because we're very much alive. As long as you're working in all four of those things simultaneously, you always are alert to the new. With the play that Brian and I are planning for next year, 2009, we're talking about investigating very new technologies, some of which I don't begin to understand with a colleague who's not here yet, and very new kinds of music. We in drama department are working with a totally new program in sound design, which is radically new. We have even a new piece of equipment called VRAST, which I heard for the first time last night in our studio theater, which has a totally different way of recreating sound, enhancing sound and using recorded sound and blending it in to the theater. So technologies are very new. Ideas ideas aren't ever really new. But the relevance of ideas and what ideas convey to contemporary audiences should be new and fresh and exciting. But the basic core of directing, I don't think, is all that different than when I learned it first at a summer camp when I first started directing plays, totally untrained. My first play was St. Joan with 9 to 11-year-olds. I only did the first act, I have to make it clear. But It wasn't the whole four-hour work, but nine to, and they're all boys. But the 11-year-olds, maybe they were 12-year-olds, for the male characters, their voices had changed, and the 9-year-old boy for St. Joan, his voice hadn't. And so that's how we made that great difference. Mm-hmm. But directing is creating the life on the stage that communicates life to a living audience. That's basically what it is. It's, of course, getting the text and the verbal creativity of the playwright, and particularly when you're working with a great